proclaim the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions.
This is Mark Oshman with the International Board of Jewish Missions, bringing you another radio Bible program. As we continue in our series about the Trinity in the Old Testament, we look at places where the Old Testament mentions God the Son or implies God the Son. The Old Testament did not refer to the second person of Trinity as God the Son, much less Jesus Christ. However, one important passage did refer to God as having a son. The second psalm functioned as a messianic hymn, that is to say, a chapter prophetically detailing some aspect of either the person or the work of the coming Messiah. After chiding the kings of the earth for their rebellion, God turned his attention to another figure, addressing him in the following manner. Quote, "Thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee," unquote. Some people might contend that these words denoted King David himself. Certainly the expression, "the Lord's anointed," could apply to David, since Samuel specifically anointed him to be king, as described in the first book of Samuel chapter 16. Moreover, David ruled as king upon the holy hill of Zion, in Jerusalem. David also subjugated a number of Gentile nations, Syrians, Ammonites, and Edom, just to take three examples. Yet in Psalm 2, God declared that he would give his son, quote, "the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession," unquote. David never exercised worldwide dominion during his lifetime. Compare that with Jesus Christ, on the other hand. He will rule over the principalities of the earth. Granted that in John 18 he told the Roman governor Pontius Pilate, quote, "Now is my kingdom not from hence," unquote. The 11th chapter of Revelation, however, revealed that a time would come when, quote, "the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ," unquote. In light of that verse, the declaration in Psalm 2 pointed to Jesus Christ rather than David, as the son of whom God referred. What about the meaning of the phrase "sons of God"? That expression appeared in several Old Testament passages. Such occurrences did not imply that the Old Testament taught that God had a number of male children, though. In idiomatic Hebrew language, the designation "sons of" does not necessarily depict familial descent. Instead, it applied to a class of beings that possessed a unified trait. Thus, the sons of Belial mentioned in Judges 19 denoted a group of individuals who manifested depraved behavior. The term "sons of God" can have different meanings in the Old Testament, depending upon the context of the passage in which it's found. In the book of Job, for example, that phrase might allude to the angelic host of heaven. Commentators have disagreed over whether the sons of God in Genesis 6 referred to angelic beings or to humans. An analogous phrase, "the sons of the living God," is found in the first chapter of the book of Hosea. That term clearly denoted the Jewish nation. In no case, however, did the Old Testament specifically identify any particular individual as being a son of God. Jesus Christ did manifest himself in the Old Testament, albeit under different titles and names. Such appearances are known as theophanies. That is to say, they detail a figure that possesses divine attributes. We will study these theophanies in our next session. This is Mark Oshman with the International Board of Jewish Missions, presenting another radio Bible program.
You've been listening to The Everlasting Nation, a ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can contact us at 423-876-8150 or go online to ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.